So today, I'm going to start out with just giving an overview of the approach that we're taking to develop this yield loss prediction tool. Touch on some other aspects of phase one of our project, where then we went down to Brazil to verify our basic assumption about the primary cause of yield loss due to soybean rust. Talk about where we've gotten so far with phase two, where we're then having experiments in Kentucky, Louisiana, and Florida to generate the data to develop our model, which we'll then use for the tool. Phase three is one of the most important phases. Those trials are going to be, have been, and are going to be in Florida because we need an independent data set that hasn't been used for developing the model to validate it before we actually have growers using it and making decisions. And that's where then phase four, where we'll be developing and testing the software so then A, it's working well as far as the model and the predictions, and also so that it is usable and getting feedback from the users so then it actually is going to be used by our target population. Touch on what's next with our project. And briefly touch on, again, what we've learned so far. So the challenge that our group has taken up is to develop a yield loss prediction model for soybean rust under U.S. conditions. This project was funded by the Risk Management Agency with the USDA in the fall of 2005. So at that point, this is a map that was generated in 2001 from long-term climate averages to assess, again, sort of the relative risk of an epidemic really taking off if the inoculum is there. And so our main test locations are in Kentucky and Louisiana, as Jim has pointed out, and they're both within the high-risk area. And so this means that we have, hopefully have confidence that then we can take the data that we've generated in those two locations and be able to then interpolate for the regions in between and so that then we have accurate predictions. The weather has not exactly been normal the last few years with temperature and rainfall patterns, but this is the incidence map from 1 year ago. And yes, I mean, as far as the incidents, they are largely within the high-risk region from the 2001 map. So as far as the approach that our group is taking, it is primarily from the crop physiology, and of course then combining elements of the plant pathology so we can better understand what may be happening, and so we can predict. So from the crop physiology, we try and then integrate information and processes that are going on at different levels of organization, starting with the cellular and subcellular, to the organ level, to the individual plant level, and of course then to a plant population level. And then we need to take into account what happens over the course of the season, the normal development of the crop, what weather may be influencing on this, and of course then what disease may be doing. And so as far as in model development, sort of the guts of it, we'll be looking at functions to try and describe what's happening. And so we can describe grain yield as a function of total biomass yield, and then the proportion of that biomass that is actually then ends up as grain. And then to describe the formation of biomass, can be described as a function of the solar radiation that is available and coming down on the surface. The proportion of that radiation which is intercepted by green leaves, and the proportion of the intercepted radiation which is converted to sugars and metabolic energy. And then we need to integrate this over time And then we should be able to then describe accurately the formation of the biomass. As has been pointed out earlier, rust causes, when an epidemic gets going, a rapid and dramatic defoliation. This is a shot from Brazil of a canopy that's been protected by fungicides versus one that the epidemic has been let loose and has had, you know, premature defoliation of the canopy. So since we have something that's so dramatic, and we know that the proportion of the intercepted radiation is, you know, the driving factor for formation of yield, we felt that this would be one of the, you know, we needed to have a, would be one of the major factors in development of our model. So we're going to be focusing on the intercepted radiation by the foliage. And so then this is going to be important for development of our model and how we're going to validate it so that then we can then, you know, accurately predict soybean rust-induced yield loss. However, before getting much further in this, we had to then step back and we had to check, you know, one of our basic assumptions. How much of the yield loss we're seeing with soybean rust is attributable to the loss of leaves? And to do this, we're then counting on our partner, Claudia Godoy, with Embrapa Soja in Londrina, where they have lots of experience with working with rust, and the rust is available. The inoculum is always there at high levels to work with the crop in the field. So this is the first phase of our project, and so we had 2 years of trials. Both trials were planted in December of 2005, and the second year was 2006. The cultivar was a Group 7 cultivar, and in both years, you know, the first flower was happening, you know, late January, early February. So to test this basic assumption, to get a handle on how much of the, how large a role defoliation has on yield loss, we set up an RCPD design. We had 6 replications and 5 treatments. Our first treatment was we let the disease develop and get started in the crop early at R1 to assure that we had a good, even source of inoculum. There were adjacent plants, rows next to the trial that were inoculated and infested with the disease, so they'll be forming an inoculum source that can be coming on and falling onto the plots. Our second treatment was we're going to then mimic the yield, the leaf loss that was happening in our disease treatment. And to do this, the plots were protected season long with fungicides, so we had green leaves. We had to then measure the leaf area in the disease plots, and then using that information, manually defoliated our protected plots, so then we would match then the change in the leaf area. So we were trying to, you know, lockstep, doing it on a weekly basis. Our third treatment was we had then the disease arriving later in the season, and to do this, they gave one spray to protect early in the season. Of course, then as the fungicide effectiveness fell off, the disease then started later in the season from the inoculum source that we had. Fourth treatment was to mimic the change in leaf area over time. And to do this, again, the canopy was protected season long. We were then measuring the leaf area in a disease treatment and then going through and manually matching the change in the leaf area. And our last treatment, the most important treatment, is our control, where then the canopy was protected season-long, and we didn't go through and remove any leaves manually. It was just in the natural change in leaf area due to the crop development. So I kept on mentioning that we were doing, you know, measuring the leaf area. So then, yes, we had to do that. So then we knew what was happening in the disease plots. We had to know how much leaf area was in the plots. So then we had in the other plots, our mimic plots, because then we had to say, okay, this is how much we need to remove, so then we can match it. Also assessed disease severity throughout the season, so then we knew what was happening in all the plots. and at the end of the season, determine the yield. So I'm just going to be showing some of the results from our second year, 2007. So this is then days after planting, and the disease severity averaging across, throughout the canopy in the different plots. So the control fungicide was doing a good job of holding the disease back. This is the disease progress curve for the first disease treatment, where we didn't spray at all and it was started early. So then it increased over time. I'm sure one of the things you'll see is you sometimes have this sort of change in the blip in the disease progress because it's a defoliating pathogen, where of course then a lot of the leaves that fell off, and then you see them apparently that case, on the average that you have a little bit less. Then we have the mimic plots, where again the fungicide was holding the disease back. The disease that started later, so it started later in the season, and so we were able to get then a differentiation and have then different times, and of course then towards the any point in the season, different levels of disease. And the mimic for those plots, for mimic plots, the fungicide was doing the same, holding the disease back. Just to give an example of the what happens with the leaf area over time from 2007. This is the leaf area index here, days after planting, and this is for the control plots. So the peak leaf area is found at R5, and then as the plant progresses in its phenology, the leaves start to fall off, and you have then a decrease in the leaf area until you, of course, harvest when you have total defoliation. This is what was happening with the leaf area index over time for our first disease treatment, where we have a rapid premature defoliation due to the disease. And then these are the mimic plots, where then you can see that Claudia's crew was able to do quite a good job of then matching the change in leaf area that was happening in the disease plots with the manual defoliation. And we can see this visually as well. These are pictures of some plots, the disease plots, the R1 plots, and the mimic plots at at about R5. And later in the season, when we're at R6, again, the disease plots and the mimic plots. So we can see that, yes, we were able to match the change fairly well. Now we get to what was happening with the yield. So this is then the yield in kilograms per hectare, and these are the different treatments for the one. So we have the control. The disease that started at R5 had an impact, but it had less of an impact, as Jim was saying, than the disease that was started earlier. So if our basic assumption is correct, that the yield loss due to soybean rust is largely due to defoliation, then we're able to match the change in leaf area, we should then have the yields which are closely matching what was happening here as well. However, when we plot them and measure them, that was not the case. We did not have nearly the yield losses with our manual defoliation that we did with the the epidemic going through and doing its thing, which then of course means that defoliation has an impact, but there's something else going on, and we need to take that into account, otherwise our model is not going to be particularly accurate or useful. So when we plot, this is for the 2 years, Jim showed this slide as well, when we plot the yield versus where we integrate under the leaf area index curve over time and have our leaf area duration, when we plot that, we do find a relationship. So we know it is having an influence. However, because it didn't match the yield response, we have to take a look and say, okay, what else is going on? What are factors? And of course, so then you see that we have a considerable amount of disease. And as Jim was mentioning, others, the leaves don't fall off with just one lesion. You have a considerable amount of disease. It's developed over time before the leaves actually fall off. So like Jim was saying, you'd have then leaves that may be heavily infected may very well not be contributing to the carbon economy of the plant, but they're still hanging on, and they're still counted as a leaf that's attached. So to try and get a quantification of this, we then developed the Healthy Leaf Area Index, where then we would take the leaf area and then discount then the percent of it that is diseased. So when we generated the curve over time and integrated under it to get then the healthy leaf area duration and plot that against yield, we have a stronger relationship. So we seem to be at least moving in the right direction of getting to a more accurate model. So from Brazil, we found that yes, soybean rust-induced yield loss was dependent on when it started, the earlier in the growth stage. It hits, the more severe the yield loss, so we have to take that into account in our model. And of course, that then the lesions on the leaves that haven't fallen off yet do have an important impact on yield, and those also that also has to be taken into account. So I'm going to talk a little bit about our second phase, model development. So from Brazil, we know that we have to then relate yield to, at the very least, a healthy leaf area index. Jim talked about the experiments that we are doing in Kentucky and Louisiana. And so when these were set up, we said, okay, what factors do we know that we want to make sure we have control of, get data on, so that then we can use those as inputs for our model. So then maturity group, so we are then using maturity groups 3 through 5. Time of defoliation, level of defoliation, so then we are then after R5, and we are doing in weekly intervals. And also row widths. So we have narrow rows versus wide rows. So then we are then, we need to have then data that is then hopefully then spanning the agronomic and physiological parameters within the region of interest. We were trying to get one model that would then be useful for the high-risk region in the southeast. So it's nice to have many hands helping with the manual defoliation. It's quite labor-intensive, and depending on the weather and things like that, this past year was very warm. It was so it made a little bit more of a challenge. Now this is a shot of our plots in Lexington. This was, I think, after about our second defoliation. And if you're looking at it from above, it's very obvious where the 100% defoliation plots are. These had the bottom third of the canopy removed. This is the control. And then these plots, this plot had the bottom two-thirds. Now looking from above, you seem to, we still have pretty good canopy closure. And as Jim was mentioning, pretty well, good light interception. And then, so I've just, got to pull a couple of the yield responses. Of course, we plotted them inverse to how Jim was plotting his, where then we have then percent of control yield, where this the control would be at 100% here, and then the days after R5. And then R6 occurred about here, and R7 occurred about here. So the most dramatic and most severe yield losses were with the 100% defoliation, early in the seed fill period, and the yield impact of the 100% defoliation declined as we progressed through the phenology of the crop. We did not have as much of an impact on yield with our two-thirds removal and our one-third removal, and that would be, visually you can see that we didn't have that much of an impact on the upper canopy as far as the light interception. And this is for our group 3 variety Asgrow. So then if we integrate under the leaf area curve and have our healthy leaf area duration, plot that against yield for Asgrow, we do see that yes, we do have a relationship. So we have this, plateauing out. It's a lot of scatter because this is for the individual plots, but at least then, we seem to be on the right path. Jim's trials with the wide rows. This is plotted the same, again, where we have 100% of control yield here, on the days after R5, R6, and R7 is when they occurred. And very similar, as Jim was showing, yield response to the 100% defoliation. And we had, with the wider rows, greater impact of the two-thirds removal, you know, with the wider rows than with the narrow rows. And again, Jim pointed out it's likely due to the differences in the decrease in light interception for the canopy. And if we plot the integration under the leaf area curve, we do get similar relationship. One of the things is that then we have, like in Asgrow, we had most of the plots here were just from the 100% defoliation, whereas the 66% here is down there as well. Now, we need to find a way to quantify the effect of the lesions on plant productivity for us to be able to come up with a useful prediction tool. And to do this, we went down to Quincy, Florida, North Florida Research and Education Center last year, because then we could have plots that has a hazard disease that we could work with. And we found some plots in Dave Walker's trial, the border plots, and they were DP7220 planted in 36 inches, and some of them had headline sprayed on so that we could find some plots that have then low disease versus high disease. So we selected leaves that showed a variation. We were picking the leaves that were higher in the canopy, so then they would have been under full sun, so then we'd be able to then measure the accurately measure the photosynthetic capacity. Plots were grew up stage 6, and we measured the net photosynthetic rate, and then Claudia assessed the percent disease on each leaflet. So here we are. We were using the Licor LI6400. The sensor is here. It's clamped to a leaflet, and then of course then it controls how much measures the CO2 coming in and the CO2 coming out. And of course then the decrease in the CO2 concentration is a measure of just how much of that CO2 is then being taken up by the plant, by the leaflet. After we got measurements that were reasonably stable, we then removed the leaflet, marked the edges of what the actual sensor was clamped on. So then we could tell exactly the 2 centimeter by 3 centimeter area that was being measured by the instrument. And then we took backlit photos of this 2 by 3 centimeter area, so then we can then assess the percent disease. So this is a control leaflet where we have full photosynthetic capacity. Here's one where we have some disease. It's about 3/4 of full capacity. This is about half of the control, and you can see that it's not covering half the area. And of course, then when Claudia was assessing the disease, she would take into account the necrotic portion of the lesion as well as the chlorotic halo around them. So that's sorry.
How would a person rate that for a score?
How would they rate? I'm not sure exactly because I didn't.
I'm asking something.
Yeah.
It would be pretty low. 10% or less. Maybe 10, less than 10.
Yeah. So on this point, we have more disease, more chlorosis, lower, and then. Here, where essentially we're not getting much net CO2 uptake at all. So then, if we plot this relative photosynthesis, where one is control against the disease severity as assessed by Claudia, we can describe the curve as a declining exponential. Now, to quantify it, what we want to develop is what was called the Bastian's coefficient. Now, this is a mathematical coefficient. And so if the coefficient is 1, then if you have 10% disease, you'd have 10% reduction. We know from just looking at that it's more than 1. We know it's greater than 1. What it is, that's what we're trying to find out. Now, if we combine this coefficient with the healthy leaf area index, we can then have calculate what we call an effective leaf area duration. We're then taking into account the disease impact more than what we can see visually, so then we can more accurately then say what is actually happening to the leads and what's, you know, their contribution. With the third phase, validating the model, we went down this year to Quincy again because we can work with them. We wanted to look at different factors. We wanted to look at row width. We had determined and indeterminate varieties. They were both group 5. And we had different disease levels, where we had disease breed control, and then we had the, you know, the disease up in the upper canopy by R5 and R6. That's what the plots looked like in early September. We have then the 15-inch rows here, we have some border plots here, and then the 30-inch rows. By early October, we had some, the color's not coming out very well, but anyway, we had some color variation at the top of the canopy. Part of that was due to the different levels of rust. And it was always handy to have a nearby irrigation boom so you can take some high shots. The measurements we took, we measured plant phenology, leaf area index, leaf interception, and disease severity throughout the season. We took then measurements of photosynthetic capacity at R6, and then at the end of the season, harvest index and combine seed yield. And of course at Quincy, it's the people that make it happen that are very important, so Dr. David Wright and Tristan Mueller are gratefully acknowledged for their efforts there. Phase 4, the software development. This is our presence in cyberspace, our approach to websites. This is where then we provide updates so people can keep up with what we've been up to. And then we just have a draft version of the yield loss calculator. And so then these are some of the inputs initially that we thought. We have, you know, maturity group, growth stage. We're likely going to be adding row width to it. And of course then we'd be, you know, they put in the estimated yield, cost, price of the soybeans, the cost of the spray, and of course then calculate saying yes, does it pay to spray or not, based on our best estimation. Now what's next? Well, we're going to continue our efforts to try and, you know, come up with better, you know, more of an accurate estimate for Bastian's coefficient rather than saying it's greater than 1. Analyze this year's data and incorporate that into our model development. And there's going to be further trials next year. And of course, then we'll be then working more on the development and the testing of our software. And what have we learned so far? Well, from our first phase, we know that yield loss models have to account for both defoliation as well as the rust lesions on the leaves that haven't fallen off yet. With our model development, we know that our yield is a function of leaf area duration, and we expect that effective leaf area duration is going to give a more robust model because hopefully then it's going to give a better estimation of what the individual leaves in the canopy are contributing to carbon economy. Model validation is still in process. Stay tuned. Software development, you can visit our project website, and there's the URL. And I want to gratefully acknowledge the additional funding that we received from the Kentucky Soybean Board and the Southern Soybean Research Program. Thank you.
Thank you, Speaker. We've got time for one question. Maybe 2 then.
I have one question. Is the plan to validate the program with the actual trials?
Yeah, at Quincy. That's where. Yeah. So that and that data from there wouldn't have been used for our model development. So then we'd see just how well our model predicts what the actual data was. Yeah. New leaf development?
Right. In other words, new leaf area being regenerated after the defoliation events.
Well,
after RFR, there are no new leaves.
Yeah, that's why we were timing our trials to the seed fill period and as far as the defoliation, because in R5, everything is just declining. Like, there's no real new leaves coming. Yeah, that would be different because then you would then potentially have, you got control of the disease, you may then very well have recovery from and then get new leaves come up, and just as long as they stay protected, then you may be able to still save your crop, depending on what happens. Did that answer your question?
Okay, thank you.